Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Just Interesting podcast. The, can we say weekly? It's been too long. The weekly show where we talk about things that we find just interesting. And it starts this week. Yeah, I think it's fair to apologize. It's been a while. It's been a few weeks. We've just all been busy into December, yeah. You know, getting into the Christmas spirit. And
it's been a mad November.
Been pretty crazy, but we will have, fingers crossed, content coming out the wazoo for you all this December.
Gosh, you see how painful it is for us to generate this stuff? All this content coming out of our wazoos.
But this week, Robin, what I wanted to discuss is if aliens exist, and, you know, they exist, don't they? People are like, no, it's just us here. Really? Is it just us? So if they do exist, what do they look like? And that's what we're going to be talking about today. And we're not just going to be speculating wildly. We'll be doing a bit of that, obviously. But we'll be looking at what some of the prominent experts in the field think about this issue. And it's interesting how so many of them have such wildly varying opinions. And there are some interesting ideas that I've come across that honestly hadn't even crossed my mind. So I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on it and dive into the topic a little bit. But before we jump into that, obviously we're going to be talking about some of our favorite comments from the past few weeks. And I believe, Robin, you're going to tantalize our listeners with a cheeky little brain teaser riddle for us.
I am indeed. Would you like to hear it?
No. Yeah, go on.
So, riddle me this. What loses its head in the morning and gets it back at night?
What loses its head in the morning
and gets it back at night? It's not your penis. Just going to cut that off before anybody goes there. Not literally.
Pretty poor choice of words there, Robin.
Of course, that would be castration. And we're not into that.
Oh, wow. That's a bit of a blast from the past. That's been a while since.
Yeah, callback, that one. Yeah.
How can castration be an inside joke for this podcast?
Sometimes you want to pause and question your life and what you've been doing with it.
Okay, yes. I actually think I've got an idea. An idea. I could be wrong.
Yeah, you're smart. You're good at these riddles. I think you'll get it.
It's an answer I'm happy with, even if it's wrong.
Yes, I don't know if this is a question to which there are multiple answers, but I only have one answer in mind for this. So, just to repeat it for those at the back, what loses its head in the morning and gets it back at night? Answer to be revealed at the end of the episode.
Indeed. And before we jump into the main topic, Robin, did you have any particular comments that you wanted to raise from previous weeks?
You know what? I did. Mm. It's been a while, as we mentioned. So we have quite a few comments, actually, to respond to. But in particular, I wanted to mention a couple of great replies we got to videos on our new channel, our new second channel called Uncovered. Head on over there. There might be a link in a card on this video if you're watching us on YouTube. If you're not watching us on YouTube, if you're listening to us on a podcast platform of your choice, then please do head over to YouTube and look up the channel Uncovered. You'll recognize the logo. It's kind of familiar to the Just Interesting one. similar to, I should say.
Beautifully designed by Robin, I'm hastened to add as well.
Oh, no, it was a joint effort, Alex. It was a joint effort.
Not really. Not really, at all.
It really was. But on the video is Walt Disney Frozen, which I made a few weeks ago and published a couple of weeks ago. Deadleafmoth7729 says, there's just way too many coincidences in the wording different parties give for the story of Disney's being cremated for it to be true. Mm. They should have changed the script for the different parties. And I thought that's some classic great detective thinking there. Because, of course, this video looks at the theory that Walt Disney was cryonically preserved and he's frozen on ice under Disneyland somewhere.
Under Pirates of the Caribbean, the ride.
Pirates of the Caribbean, yeah. So I looked at all what evidence exists for that and the origins of that story. And then, of course, I looked at the evidence against it. And I hadn't thought about it whilst I was making the video, but Deadleafmoth7729 makes a good point that for all these people saying, oh, he's cremated, he's not on ice, the wording of their statements is kind of similar. So yeah, suspicious? I don't know.
Hmm. That is interesting. I'll need to go over and rewatch your video to just what? To just to double check and hit the like and subscribe button as well while I'm at it. Again. Nice.
What about you? Do you have any comments that you'd like to respond?
Yeah, so I had a comment. This was from a podcast a few weeks ago from Kylie3447. I think this was on the episode where we discussed the most expensive treasures that are still missing. And we were talking about Fabergé eggs. And were talking about if we found a lost Fabergé egg, who would play us in the movie? It's one of those comments.
Yeah.
And Kylie says, Stephen Merchant would play Robin. Yes. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about Stephen Merchant?
Kind of flattered and, you know, it's spot on, I think, actually. That's pretty good. That's pretty good, annoyingly. I don't sound like him, though. So, and I'm not sure he can do any other accent but his own.
He's so recognizable as Stephen Merchant, though. Like, as in, his voice is so like, hello, I'm Stephen Merchant.
Such a good impression. Hello, is it Fabergé egg? What's this?
Yeah, exactly. And they go on and say, Matt Berry would play me, which I'll happily accept.
Is this just Garth Marenghi's Dark Place? Is this
it takes a twist with Martin. One, I'm going to have to, what do you think, Robin? Daniel Radcliffe would play Martin.
What?
There's a bit of a twist, that.
That's a bit of a...
You've done, look, I thought we were fine, but you've really done us dirty in this trio, me and Robin.
Yeah.
Giving Daniel Radcliffe to Martin.
No, though, obviously Martin's a good looking fella, but you know, he's not Daniel Radcliffe. Also, I don't think they look much alike, do you?
I don't especially see it.
I can see Matt Berry and Stephen Merchant for us. There's a resemblance there, but Daniel Radcliffe for Martin doesn't. I don't see that.
I don't know.
But
I guess. In case anyone is wondering where Martin is, we should have said sorry.
We should have actually.
But he did tell us not to actually mention it. But he is filling in for Daniel Radcliffe at the moment, just his body double. So. Yeah, actually, just, thinking
there's
about
some
it,
really
that,
explicit
that
sex scenes in Daniel Radcliffe's new film, and they needed somebody who was a spitting image for his physique. You don't see the face, so actually, that does make a lot of sense. From the neck down, Martin and Daniel Radcliffe are, you know, hard to tell apart.
And the reason why Daniel Radcliffe doesn't do the scenes himself is just because he gets too cold on set. He's not embarrassed or anything. He just gets a bit cold, a bit chilly. So he just has his body double fill in for him for those scenes. Just in case anyone's wondering.
He's a father now, isn't he? So he's playing it safe as well. He doesn't want to upset his future children with all these explicit scenes.
Very respectful. Very respectful.
I did tell him, though. I said, Daniel, you don't have to do porn, but Martin's available if you do. And that's how it happened.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Okay, well... Robin, we should probably say a big extra special thank you to some lovely people who are still continuing to support us over on Patreon, which we cannot tell you how much we appreciate.
We really do. You're wonderful Patreon supporters and YouTube members who keep this channel going and enable us to do our second channel, Uncovered, on YouTube, our little documentaries. Without you, we couldn't do it. And you definitely keep the metaphorical lights on this podcast, even when we take an unintended break. You're wonderful people. Are there keeping us going? And so a special thank you to Cindy Hafner, James, Rashad Najjar, Caleb Wilkerson, Kurt Jones, John Baker, Henny Ruffle, The Super Show Podcast, Nicholas Dill, Emmett Tapia, Ahmad, Peaseward, Josh Tromatek, The Filthy Casual, and Simon Workman.
Woo! Nice. Thank you all so, so much for all of your support. And I promise we will have several more, a little more interestings coming up in the very, very near future for you all.
Patreon and YouTube member exclusive mini episodes, a little more interesting coming up soon.
Now, Robin, shall we talk about aliens?
Yes, damn it.
So we're speculating and looking at expert opinions on what life would look like beyond our own planet. What would extraterrestrial life actually look like? And before we get into, you know, the professional opinions, Robin. Let's take your opinion and my opinion and see what we would think. What do you think alien life would look like if we ever stumbled upon it?
So I've got two answers to this, and I hope you don't mind me giving you two answers.
Yeah.
It's not cheating.
Okay.
So my actual instinct is alien life is going to look like nothing we can imagine. And I feel that same way every time I see photos or footage of deep sea creatures on Earth.
Okay,
you know, when
yeah.
you go down to the depths of the ocean and you see like whale fish or Dumbo fish or just sponges, you know, and you think, is that a living thing? It just looks like a bright yellow clump of nothing.
Yeah,
rubbish.
Yeah.
And spindly squid and phantom jellyfish and things like that. They're all freaky looking things. And I think my genuine feeling is that that's what alien life will look like.
Mm. Like starfish, when you look at it, a starfish, and you think that's just a kind of weird looking rock. But then they've got like hundreds of legs underneath, like all just moving them slowly.
It's that's creepy. It. Yeah. And insect life, I think. All those microscopic views of insects, and you realize that flies are actually really, really freaky looking up close. And they're freaky enough with normal human vision. So that's my first answer. I think alien life is going to be something really, really incomprehensible. A Lovecraftian kind of creature, to be honest.
Yeah.
Indescribable.
You just can't imagine it.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's beyond my imagination. However, my second instinct is, though, that's alien life in general. But if we were to be visited by aliens, they would have to be intelligent, right? They'd have to be able to develop technology. If they developed technology, my assumption is, obviously I could be wrong, but my assumption is they would have had to have created fire, because you know our own experience teaches us that the ability to control fire leads to the creation of tools, which allows the creation of machines, which is technology, which leads to where we are now with space travel. So if they were to develop fire, they would have to be land-based. They wouldn't be underwater creatures.
Okay, right? Yeah, sure.
So then if they're land-based creatures, they probably, the ones that would be technologically advanced enough to visit us, might look recognizably, you know, bipedal or quadrupedal, or maybe millipedal. You know, they would have
humanoids.
They would be walkers. I think they would be, not necessarily humanoids, but some kind of, we would recognize them as animals rather than just things.
Kind of, you know, Star like, Trek-y Mass Effect level of differing from us. Like how tall
maybe
are
more
they?
Like Star Wars, you know, when you see
that
the level, like Star Trek's, but they're basically humans, but
things,
yeah,
yeah,
more
Jar Jar
Binks kind of extreme. Maybe, yes. Yeah, that's my feeling. What about you? What do you expect alien life to look like?
I think I don't know. I just really, really hope that if aliens ever visited us one day, they're just the classic little green men. Like, but here's my thinking behind it. What if they're on their way here right now, little green men, you know, the classic image of aliens with their three fingers and, you know, big wide eyes and bald heads and generally quite small, aren't they? Like 3 foot. Big beady eyes. What if they're on their way here right now, but they sent things before just to kind of like seed their, you know, let us kind of get an idea that they're on their way, so we're not too surprised when they arrive. So we have this idea in our heads of little green men. What if they implanted that idea in us, like, you know, decades and decades ago? So that when they do finally arrive, we're like, oh yeah, they're aliens, because we've already thought of them as aliens. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're like, hello, we're here. Yep, that's us. The ones you've been seeing in your dreams for like hundreds of years. The ones you've been imagining, we are here. Yep, that is us. What do you think? That's my conspiracy theory for the day.
I like it. I think that's a nice theory. Our perception of little grey men or green men has been planted by the aliens themselves, so that they will be familiar when they come down and herd us all onto their ships to be slaughtered as cattle to feed their starving nation.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, Steven Spielberg has definitely, they saw Steven Spielberg and they implanted, you know, some thoughts into his head. Anyway, yeah, that's my thinking.
That's good. Yeah, I like it. I like it very much.
More realistically, I kind of feel like, similar to what you've said, if they've managed to make it all the way here, yeah, maybe intelligent life is quite rare, I think. Life in the universe, I think, is way more common than intelligent life. But yeah, maybe if there is intelligent life out there, maybe it has to kind of go through the similar processes that we had to go through to get here.
I think, in fact, one of the scientists who we're going to look at shares that view as well.
So yeah, maybe they won't look dissimilar to us. How mad would that be, though, if alien spaceship arrives, but it kind of looks like a spaceship that we have already? And we just confuse them with people, really. We think they must be like from another country when actually they're from another planet.
I think you'd get two responses. I think you'd get disappointment from a lot of people, including myself. And then you'd get all the really enthusiastic Bible bashers who are like, see, God made life in his own image.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Even the aliens look like us. I think that's...
I hadn't even considered that. But yeah, that would, because there's always the thought that, like, if aliens showed up, wow, that would really rock religion, wouldn't it? Like, as in a bad way, that would shake a lot of people's faiths.
Yeah.
But if they turned up and they looked exactly like us, maybe not.
Yeah. It's, we gotta think about these things.
Yeah.
I mean, well, what's interesting to me is that, and we should probably just establish this as a kind of the basis for this discussion, the chances are high, very high, that there is life out there. Of course, there's maybe not intelligent life, but definitely life. But we can only, scientists looking for it, and of course a very active search at the moment, can only look for certain criteria, though, in the hunt for life. And this is part of the problem with maybe imagining what life could be like, where we have to think outside the box, because scientifically speaking, you can only look for what you know to be the truth. In this case, we know that life exists on Earth, and we know that all life on Earth is water and carbon-based.
Yeah.
So when they're looking for life elsewhere in the universe, in the galaxy at the moment, they're looking for planets that have traces of water, preferably, and carbon, or exist in a position relative to their own sun, similar to Earth's, that we know allows water and carbon to coexist
in the
water and liquid form, of course.
The Goldilocks zone, isn't it?
Well, the Goldilocks zone, yeah, exactly.
Not too hot, not too cold, but just right.
Yeah. And apparently, I think the statistics are that there's 1 in 4 stars has a planet of a similar size and temperature to Earth.
1 in 4 so planets?
1 in 4 stars, yeah. 1 in 4 stars.
Oh, okay.
Has a planet similar to Earth in that Goldilocks zone.
Wow.
So those odds mean that it's very, very probable that life exists.
Mm.
And if life exists in those circumstances, then life is probably going to be water and carbon-based, which means that that's the assumption I think a lot of scientists are using. When you ask the question, what was alien life look like? They're saying, this is what we know. The other thing to remember is that we have found bacteria have survived in space from human craft.
That's kind of the theory that life was seeded. Our planet had life seeded from like meteors and
there could
things
be,
crashing to Earth.
Yeah, so there could be potentially a planet that was destroyed and exploded into loads of asteroids, and those asteroids have bacteria on them, and those asteroids have traveled throughout the universe, landing on other planets. And every time they've landed on a planet like Earth, which has the conditions for life, that life has then survived and evolved into complex organisms, and eventually into intelligent complex organisms too. capable of space travel.
Capable of space travel or hosting podcasts.
Yeah. One of the two. There's only two options. So there's even a calculation done, I think, by scholars at the Institute for Theory and Computation, who published a paper and that calculated there may be as many as 10 trillion asteroid-sized objects carrying life.
Wow, that's a lot. That is a lot.
That's a lot. So based on that, that's the latest statistics on it. So chances are high then that if life exists in the universe, and that's probable, alien life that is, obviously life exists, we're here. If alien life exists in the universe, chances are pretty high that it would be something familiar, I think. Or at least it would have gone through a familiar stage.
Yeah.
As we did in our early evolution. The question is whether if it reached this point in our history, the equivalent point in on another planet, would it have evolved into something like us? I think. Well, let's see what the scientists think. So yeah, this is the theory called panspermia by Chandra Wickramasinghe, working with Fred Hoyle. Mathematicians and astronomers and astrobiologists, and they came up with this theory, this idea that microbes traveled through space on meteors and interstellar dust and landed on Earth maybe 4 billion years ago.
They even suggest that if this is true, then that this could also have landed on the moon, and that if we ever found that, we might be find evidence of that on the moon.
Surprising that they didn't, though.
Well, I mean, we have hardly explored the moon, so
true. We haven't got much moon rock, yeah.
So that's always a possibility, and that would give a lot of credence to this theory. So that could be a massive, you know, discovery if that's ever made. Because if we find this evidence that they're suggesting, microbial life might or you know, fossils of microbial life on the moon, then wow, that would really shake up our understanding of our place in the universe.
That would have to confirm it, right? Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It would have to confirm it.
A bit more recognizable name, at least over here in the UK. But would you like to hear Brian Cox's take on the subject?
I would love to hear his take.
So in his 2015 book, Human Universe, Cox writes, there is a sense of chemical inevitability to life in the universe. But that complex life on Earth only arose after the emergence of cells containing organelles. Yeah, I'm not going to pretend to know what that means.
It's a biology thing.
It's a biology thing. But he's basically
organelles
saying
are the kind of things within cells. So a bacterium, is only contains itself. And organelles, like cells in the human body, have things inside them.
But he's basically saying that intelligent life would be way less common than general life in the universe, which he says is likely going to be abundant. It's what we've kind of said already, yeah. And he calls it specifically an evolutionary bottleneck and thinks it's so unusual that it might have literally only happened once in the universe. He's kind of got a bit of a bleak outlook that we may be the only intelligent life out there, which is kind of sad to think.
Yeah. Interesting to hear a scientist, though, say that. I feel like you don't often hear scientists.
I mean, you also have things like Fermi's paradox, which needs an answer. We talk about how abundant life must be in the universe if one in four star systems has a Goldilocks planet. Where are all the aliens? How have we not discovered them? How is the universe not super loud with people shouting and saying hey, look, over here. You know, where's the galactic two tin cans with a bit of string in between?
It's a depressing thought that we might be, if we're not the only intelligent life, we are the most advanced intelligent life in the universe. Isn't that a depressing thought?
We got that
first.
We're
going to be the aliens, the little grey men visiting other planets. Paul Davis, who in a 2016 paper said that because all life as we know it, which is life on Earth, has arisen from a single common ancestor, a single-celled organism like a bacterium, an amoeba, way back in the distant past, about 4 billion years ago, we don't know what aspects of life are kind of fundamental to life. So he uses the term law-like, as in we talk about the laws of physics and the laws of nature. Which of those laws apply to all life across the universe, is what he's saying. And he suggests that it's possible that extraterrestrial life will not ultimately be reducible to known physical principles.
Yeah.
In other words, it's indescribable. It's a classic Lovecraftian kind of, you can never possibly comprehend what alien life will look like, because it won't necessarily follow the rules that we think about.
So like the general rules are, like, in biology at least, life or organisms, the characteristics are what, like, respire, grow, movement, excrete, reproduce, metabolize, I think.
Yes, there was a catchy, what was the acronym for that?
I'm forgetting my year
like
seven,
Mrs. Nerd
six,
or something
year
like that.
Six or year seven science.
Yeah, no, you're actually, right, remembered.
That sounds about right. But I mean, you're absolutely right. Those are, there's kind of no real exceptions to that on Earth, any of those. So yeah, like, alien life doesn't necessarily have to obey those rules. That's just based on what we know here, but it can be completely different.
So he's saying what I was kind of hinting at the beginning of this discussion, which is that the search for life in the universe at the moment is restricted by scientists saying, right, we've got to look for what we know works, what we know is necessary for life to exist, but all that we know is life on Earth, and we don't.
Yeah.
It's even possible, I mean, this, I'm being fantastical now, but it's even possible there's life on the moon, and it's just happens to be all that moon dust that's settled on the surface is actually alive.
Mm.
It's just completely unrecognizable, you know? Like, it might even be sentient, but it lacks the ability to move, doesn't need to eat, doesn't reproduce. It just kind of sits there thinking.
They do say something interesting, which I haven't heard before, but it's an interesting way of thinking about it. But they suggest the true essential for life is information, as opposed to any of the kind of boundaries that we've set on it, like reproducing,
like DNA
and eating or respiring or something, you know, like
the
true essential for life is seeking information, or just information, retaining information, I guess. I don't know.
That sounds a lot like technology. We're in the information age. Does that mean computers are alive?
I guess if they're independently seeking more information, then that is a kind of AI, I guess, isn't it? And being able to learn independently of anything else. At the moment, machines, I mean, we're describing AI now. But I mean, is AI the same as life? By the metrics that we've already said, yes. That's possibly a different discussion, except that it's not, because there's another person who I want to bring up who has an interesting theory. If we look at, like, where we're heading as a species, AI is a buzzword currently, but, you know, in 30, 50, 100 years' time, there are some people who are thinking that AI is basically the next step in human evolution. So, like, AI is not, it's just a kind of natural progression, and we are eventually going to make ourselves irrelevant, and AI will can take over, Terminator style, or not Terminator style, maybe just like maybe it's a gradual thing, we just kind of die out as AI takes over.
More like the movie AI.
Where
exactly. They go into the future and they're all kind of robots.
But Lord Martin Rees, who's the UK's Astronomer Royal, based at the University of Cambridge, he's written a piece where he says, we've long assumed that aliens will be like us, but there's every reason to think they are instead a form of unfathomable AI. And this seems actually very believable to me. If we're saying that, like, aliens are going through the exact same or very similar sort of processes that we are, like you said, discovering fire, being land-based, information-driven, then before they decide to make a spaceship and go to another planet, they may, as we may, eradicate themselves by creating an artificial intelligence. And this, not only is this quite scary to think about, but it's also gives them a huge advantage over traditional like life forms, because you know they don't have to have a planet with an atmosphere to survive. They could, they might even prefer living in the deepest recesses of space with zero gravity. They don't even need a, they don't need to be near a sun. They might even prefer the cold. As he says, if they're a silicon-based structure, like life form, they're, you know, what they're made of, they might realize that it's better, works better when they're not near a body of heat. They could just exist in the space between stars. So it's the advantages of that for an artificial life form is huge over traditional life forms.
Yeah, that's wow.
And he also says that it raises some striking possibilities that if they're out there, they're going to think and act completely different to us. They may not they may not want to be detected. Their intentions may be impossible to fathom. He quotes Charles Darwin saying, "A dog might as well speculate on the mind of Isaac Newton." so, yeah.
Well, that's comforting. That's very terrifying.
But also, they, you know, they could put themselves in a deep sleep whilst traveling intergalactic distances.
Just in standby mode until they get switched on again.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So the lesson I'm beginning to learn from this episode, Alex, is that on the off chance that when alien life, intelligent life comes to Earth and, you know, reveals itself and presumably would have the technology to eradicate us if they wished, because they might be fish or they might be humanoid or they might be AI, we need to treat all those things very carefully. What if they look like cows? Let's stop eating cows. Let's all go Hindu and worship the cow.
They had it right all along.
Play itself. And it's like, what do we do? And we all go we all go vegan and we just kind of reduce ourselves to eating grass. And finally the aliens arrive and they're blades of grass.
Like, how you've been murdering
our relatives. Oh man.
They round up all the vegans, yeah. God, that would be so unbearable to be left behind with all the kind of like people that are like, "We told you," like meat eating are weirdly against vegans.
Why are you taking all the cattle? Why are you taking all the animals that we eat? What are you doing?
Yeah.
They've been eating us too. We had to care of them. I don't know why the grass talks like this, but they do.
But speaking of technology, actually, there's someone else we should probably mention. Jason Wright, who's an astrophysicist at Pennsylvania State University in the US.
Oh, yeah.
He suggests that rather than looking for signs of life or intelligent life, what we should be focusing on is looking at builds. You know, he suggests that intelligent life could be skilled builders and engineers. So we should look for things that they may have built. And specifically, one hypothetical structure that you could call it is a Dyson sphere. And this is kind of basically seen as the end game of a very advanced civilization. You know, what's the best way of harvesting energy? Well, in a solar system, energy comes from the sun. So the best way is to harness that energy directly. And this is essentially a hypothetical structure that would be placed around a sun. There are different forms of it. You can get Dyson spheres, you can get Dyson swarms. But, you know, there could be essentially a Death Star sized thing out there surrounding a sun. And that's the kind of thing that with our telescopes, with things like the James Webb telescope, we might be able to notice, and it might be easier to spot things like this than it would be otherwise, because we would directly see it affecting the sun.
This hit the headlines, didn't it, back in, I would say, 2016?
Yeah, gosh, because that was there, was a, year. There was a sun was behaving weirdly or something.
KIC 8462852.
Oh, did you you remembered it? Oh, great.
No, no, I just looked it up. I just looked it up. I remembered it was KIC something, and that was it. That's the designation given to a star in the constellation Cygnus that briefly was suspected of maybe having a Dyson sphere around it because it kept dimming mysteriously for no reason. They look at stars and look at the fluctuations in their light to detect where planets are passing between the star and us. But the calculations didn't make sense for planets going in front of the sun. So they thought maybe it would be a Dyson sphere that kind of covers, that like sucking the energy out of the sun and dimming it periodically. I think it was quite regular as well, wasn't it? I feel like there was a follow-up to that where scientists said, no, it probably isn't. But it was not.
I think it was like space dust or something,
going in front of a big cloud, wasn't it? Massive cloud of space dust. Yeah, that was orbiting at great speed around the star. But I feel like there have been several announcements like that in recent years where scientists, you know, they've made the headlines and said, we found this thing that doesn't make sense except a plausible explanation would be aliens. And then within months, scientists have said, but it's probably not.
And
Is
it?
And then you probe further and just like, and your reason for dismissing it is not really a reason. it's probably not.
I don't, like, a lot of times with conspiracy theories, I think, like, why would they go to that effort to cover this up if that's the case? You know, like the flat Earth theory, who's really that invested, like, in why would they be doing this kind of thing? NASA, fine. But there's space agencies and private companies all around the world doing this now. Who's keeping this secret? Whereas this, I could totally see the benefit of scientists thinking they don't need to know. If they found a Dyson sphere, essentially what that means is, one, we're not alone. And two, if these aliens ever discovered us and were hostile in any way, we're screwed. There is no advantage to everyone knowing that there's a Dyson sphere out there. It's if anything, possibly quite depressing because it means that we are behind and we are heavily behind. Because if a civilization has a Dyson sphere, then that's like, that just means that they could do whatever they want, basically.
Unless we could create a computer virus on a Mac.
Yes. I like where you're going.
And interface with the alien spaceship somehow.
Must go faster.
USB 3.0. We can do this.
Yeah, so I could kind of... That's an interesting one. What would be your reaction to that, finding that out? Or what do you think would happen globally?
What, discovering a Dyson sphere?
Yeah. If scientists announced, we have definitely, conclusively... Yeah. Here's an image of it. We found an artificial structure around the sun that's harvesting its energy.
I think I'd be freaked out, to be honest. I think it would have very that simultaneous. Out, yeah. Yeah, I'd have that simultaneous depression of just like, oh yeah, we're so pathetic, and I'm so skeptical of humanity that I don't think it would be a when the news came out, I mean, my instinct would be, we're not going to unify over this and suddenly think, let's aspire to be like them. Let's be good so as not to get destroyed when they come calling. We absolutely wouldn't do that. So I'd get depressed over that. And then my second thing would probably be just depression over the knowing I would never know, knowing they're there and be like, oh, come on, I need to know more. I need to know who these people are, how they got there, why they haven't found us yet, why they haven't come visited us. If they have found us, I need to know. And I know that I wouldn't know in my lifetime. Or I'd wake up cold sweat every day, nightmares, thinking, are they here yet? Are they here? And then one day we'd find out through some kind of clever message, a ship would come down, land on top of the White House, the hatch would open, a ramp would slowly fold out dramatically, and out would walk a very average-looking, bald man with a wispy beard. And say like, oh, you guys, we lost you a few million years ago. We wondered where you got to.
What? Hey, it's you guys.
And we're like, what?
How have you been, buddy?
Yeah, like, how come, have you regressed? How come you haven't, what happened to your spaceship? Did you break your spaceship and you didn't have all the technology? Is that what happened?
So you're saying that it's a galactic level, like, embarrassingly running into old school friends who are way more successful than you.
Yeah.
That's what's happening on a galactic scale. Oh, you've got some satellites. Yeah, no, that's great. Oh, you're going to Mars in a few years? Cool.
Okay.
We can lend you a spaceship if you want.
yeah.
We could take you there now.
Do you want? Did you lose the keys to the Stargate? We could teleport if you like. I mean, we don't have to teleport, but you know, if you want to teleport.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you still growing crops? You mean you don't? Wow, you guys are farming. Okay, right. Yeah. Good for you. Good for you. Yeah. Good.
Nice.
Yeah. Right.
Cool. Yeah. We'd love to stay for dinner, but sorry, we've got plans.
Yeah,
but gotta go. But hey, great running into you.
Yeah.
We probably should end this fictional dialogue at some point soon. But I love that idea.
What would your reaction be if we confirmed a Dyson sphere and therefore an alien civilization far away? Yeah,
I mean,
within reach.
Honestly, kind of. I think similar to what you've said. It's hard to predict how you'd react to that kind of knowledge. I feel like lots of people would deny it. There'd be lots of denial about it. Obviously,
it'd be insufferable.
I feel like there would be more of a drive towards creating our own. I don't think it'd be like a massive, super global effort. But I think there are realistic. Semi-relatively realistic propositions to creating a Dyson sphere, maybe in the next like 100 to 200 years. A Dyson swarm would be relatively achievable. Yeah. The general approach, I think, is you would build a kind of automated manufacturing system on Mercury that would use... Do you remember we spoke about a few weeks ago, there was a... I can't remember the name of it, but it's a way of launching satellites into space by just spinning really quickly and then
Yes.
You'd build one of those on Mercury, and then you'd have robots on Mercury basically harvesting things to build solar panels and then shooting it from Mercury around the sun in a swarm. And you just keep doing that until eventually you've got one.
How do you get the energy to Earth? What's the...
Well, then, they would have to... have some way of sending that energy that hasn't been discovered, I guess.
I suppose you could build them with like batteries, chargeable batteries in them, and then once they're full, they just launch them to Earth, and then we collect them and use them, I guess.
Yeah, I think there's probably more advanced. Yeah, there'd have to be. I don't know if that would work. But
gentle put down. Nice, Alex. Thank you, Alex. That's very kind of you.
I just can't see the scenario where we've put million we've created automated systems to create a Dyson swarm, but we're still sending them up with some AA batteries. maybe we will.
I was thinking, you know, large tanker sized batteries, but you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It is. There would be some advanced way of transmitting it through the ether of space.
I don't know the ether of space
doesn't exist.
Yeah, so maybe there would be like some kind of more. Maybe Elon would stop focusing so much on Mars and focus on that.
He would though. He would absolutely be the first. If they found a Dyson sphere, you know, the next day he'd be like, "SpaceX is building a Dyson sphere, and it'll be ready by 2030."
I could so see him doing something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
were there anyone else that we wanted to mention?
I feel like there's one big name that we should probably end on, which is other than
go for it,
Neil deGrasse Tyson. Of course, we all want to hear from him. Alex, what did he say?
It is an interesting thought. So he says that extraterrestrials must be limited to a maximum size. So he says it can't be as big as a solar system, 10 light years across, because even assuming nerve impulses at the speed of light, if it wanted to scratch its head, then this simple act would take 10 hours to accomplish.
Thanks, Neil.
Honestly, it's not that helpful, to be honest, is it? It's like, What do you think alien life would look like, Neil? I'll tell you what it's not going to be like. Tens light years across, because it'll take ages to scratch its head.
What a bizarre... I mean, it is useful to acknowledge that, yes, there must be some parameters, yeah, some maximum parameters to what life would be like, but it's not helpful, yeah. It's not helpful at all.
I guess maybe he's saying, like, there's the kind of sci-fi idea of things like massive cosmic entities.
Like Galactus in Marvel Comics, yeah, who goes around eating planets because he's so big. Yeah.
Yeah, or space whales and that kind of thing. Maybe he's...
Yeah.
Or like you said, like big Lovecraftian creatures that are...
That's true.
Gods,
yeah. Yeah. Epic-sized creatures. But wouldn't it be funny, though, if the first life we ever discover is literally a space whale as it passes by, and Neil deGrasse Tyson's just there like, well.
Technically, I'm not wrong, because it doesn't have fingers to scratch its head. But he does say, though, that, or he hopes, that if there are intelligent extraterrestrials out there, that they are sending out messages into the cosmos rather than, like us, just scanning for messages in the hopes of hearing an alien transmission. If not, he writes, everybody could be listening, nobody would be receiving, and we would collectively conclude that there's no other intelligent life in the universe.
I'm glad you brought that up, or I'm glad that you brought up the fact that Neil brought that up, because we didn't mention that earlier. We talked about the search for life, but yeah, we're looking for... What if everyone is
just looking for signals,
rather than actually proactively saying, let's go out there?
But I think
understand why, though. It's a difficult decision to make, isn't it?
Yeah. I feel like I would want to be able to see them before they've seen us.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe it just takes... Yeah. Someone should just be the one, and I'm saying someone as in, like, I mean a whole civilization, should be the one to step up and
start it. Start the ball rolling.
Make a big sign. Yeah. Make a big splash.
It was Carl Sagan pointed out, wasn't it, in his book, which became the film Contact, the whole idea that the first transmission from Earth to enter outer space was a speech by Hitler. And that's a terrifying thought. Like the first thing aliens might pick up from the human race is a speech by Hitler. And if they could figure out how to translate German, they might wonder.
Like, these guys are not it. They are...
Or worse still, this guy knows what he's talking about.
This guy gets it.
Let's go down there. And a bunch of brown shirt wearing aliens turn up. It's like, hey guys, we're here.
All looking to get their copies of Mein Kampf. Autographed,
awkward.
Wow. Well, this discussion went into areas that I didn't think it would, but
I feel like it often does get dragged down, doesn't it? But that was a fascinating discussion. Thank you, Alex. And I think what I like most is that our wild speculation was not too far removed from actual scientists. Wild speculation.
Yeah, but I mean, in fairness, I'm actually going to say that. The actual scientists' opinions, some were so varied as to be like, we could have said anything and it wouldn't seem outlandish. Yes. Neil just said that they can't scratch their head.
That's true. These scientists are hedging their bets. They're definitely covering their bases. No.
Which one out of all of them do you think... Having looked at all of the theories, are you still set in your answer, like what you said at the start? Has any of them convinced you or made you think about it a little bit more?
So, Brian Cox kind of made me think twice about my whole, if there's intelligent life, I think they'd be more recognizable because they'd have to be a land mammal that had some kind of opposable digits and limbs that could work technology and
right.
They might look like a giant insect or a giant fish, but they would be recognizably an animal of some kind.
Okay.
Now Brian Cox has made me obviously doubt that because of the very specific circumstances in which complex life arose on Earth in the first place. That means that might not exist at all. And all alien life might just be simple celled organisms, some kind of moss or sponge or kind of liquid goop, which is kind of sad. There was one, who was it, mentioned the AI person completely freaked me out.
Yeah.
Particularly with all the probes and things that we've sent out into space, like Voyager, which reminds me of Star Trek, the motion picture. What if Voyager, which is the furthest traveled human spacecraft to date, and presumably will be forever, but we don't know because it might collide with something and get destroyed and then another craft might overtake it. But for now, we think it's still out there and it's fine. What if that travels so far, it kind of somehow, I don't know, travels through some magic space dust and becomes sentient in its own right, and then travels far enough, there's a slingshot around the galaxy, comes back, and it's like the Borg. You know, it's just arrived and it's like, we're here to assimilate you. Don't know why it sounds like that, but, you know.
Or it's mad because we sent it away. You sent me away into that darkness.
Why did you send me away?
Interesting idea, yeah. Robin. You've got a movie script there, I think. That's, yeah.
Sorted.
Martin Rees is the AI guy. And yeah, honestly, his theory kind of scares me more than the others, because I feel like it's just the kind of evolution of the, pardon the pun, of some of the other ideas that, like, yeah, if life, intelligent life does exist and is similar to us and has gone down a similar path to us, then maybe it's just an AI life that they... that this intelligent race invents, and the advantages that the AI would have over biological life would makes it quite believable in my eyes. Yeah.
But what do you think? What do our listeners think? Please do tell us either in the comments below if you're watching us on YouTube, or throw us an X on the platform formerly known as Twitter. I'm at All Time Robin.
And I'm at Just Alexing.
Or you can contact all of us, the channel, at jinterestingyt. Do it. We want to hear from you. Maybe we'll put a poll up on Twitter and get your responses. But before we say goodbye...
Oh my gosh, yes! The
riddle!
Want to
hear the answer to the riddle?
Of course.
You're so confident that you got it that you didn't need to hear it. Okay, so for those of you wondering, for needing a refresher, the riddle is, what loses its head in the morning... but gets it back at night. What do you think it is, Alex?
So I could be wrong, but I like my answer anyway. Is it a pillow?
Spot on.
Is
yeah,
it?
It's a piddle.
Yes.
It's a piddle. It's a pillow.
It's a piddle.
Oh my gosh. Oh dear. It is a pillow. Well done.
Well, thank you so much for that, Robin. Let us know in the comments if you got the answer to the riddle as well. We hope you enjoyed this discussion. I really enjoyed this discussion, actually.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I love these speculative things.
It's always a topic that I love talking about, a bit of aliens. We'll see you next week, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.